That is some of the piece by Stephen Andrew Taylor, which comes from a larger work. It's actually the fifth movement of a larger work called Shattering Suns. And I'm not exactly sure how this is pronounced, but Steve Taylor is here to correct me if I say Viriditas and that's wrong.
I say Viriditas.
Viriditas.
I don't know how to say it, actually.
Ah, well, then where did you come up with the name?
The name comes from a novel by Kim Stanley Robinson about colonizing Mars. And Viriditas refers to the force of life, which just accompanies us everywhere.
And we played this piece because it's one of three works that is on a program tomorrow night by the University of Illinois Wind Symphony at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Concert starts at 7:30, and Linda Morehouse, the acting director of bands, will be conducting that concert. We have not only Steve Taylor, but also the composer of one of the other two pieces on that program. But you could the title and setup of that last piece sort of sets the tone for not only the other pieces on the program, but also the conference of which this concert is a part. It's called Writing Another Future: Science Fiction, the Arts, and Humanities. Steve, I think, is the coordinator for that. And that kicks off tonight at the Krannert Center with a concert by the Illinois Modern Ensemble, which of which Steve is the director. That's at 7:30 at the Krannert Center. And then this concert tomorrow night at 7:30. There's a keynote lecture tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock at the Music Building Auditorium on the University of Illinois campus. And then the final concert is actually Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Also in the Music Building Auditorium. It's called Writing Another Future, a concert of electroacoustic music from the University of Illinois Experimental Music Studios. And Steve, I sort of introduce things with you, not only because you're the coordinator of this conference, but also because you seem to have this thing for space music. You had a space opera that the U of I did last year, 2 years ago?
2012.
So what is with that, and why this particular title for the conference, theme for the conference?
One of my earliest memories is watching Neil Armstrong walk on the moon, and I think that's always played a pretty big part in my life. After I wrote that opera based on Ursula Le Guin's science fiction work, I just thought it would be cool to do a whole conference on science fiction and the arts. And so that's how we're getting this happening this week.
And did you have anything to do with bringing Perry Goldstein here, who is the composer of the work that will open tomorrow night's concert?
Well, Perry, who is a fantastic composer and great friend, even though we just met yesterday, he wrote this wonderful piece with a text by Richard Powers, who's one of our greatest novelists, and he actually lives here in Urbana. And so I really wanted to include something by Rick Powers just because he's a lot of his work references science fiction in one way or another. And then Rick said, well, believe it or not, this composer Perry Goldstein wrote a piece that I wrote the text for, assembling from Antarctica. And I immediately thought, Antarctica, that's the closest thing to an alien planet that we have on Earth.
On Earth.
And so I was so excited to when Perry sent the score, and it was fantastic. And so I'm delighted that he could help us out with this conference.
And Perry Goldstein is here with us. And also the soloist for the piece, which is the short title, Should This Be Found, soprano Brenna Harris is also with us today. And I want to say thanks to both of you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
I sort of set up the whole program today with the promo for the show running the last couple days, in which I said that music, that wind ensembles or concert bands seem to have feel a greater license to play newer music than, say, the average symphony orchestra, which I'm pretty confident is extremely true. And this topic has come up a little bit on the program every once in a while. But I wonder, Perry, whether writing for wind ensemble is something that is new to you, and whether it is or isn't, what attracted you to the medium?
I was fortunate to have a commission from the United States Military Academy Band at West Point. I had worked with their saxophone quartet. And as a result of that, I was commissioned to write a saxophone quartet concerto for sax quartet and band. And that was apparently successful enough that I was asked then to write a set of songs. I should probably mention that the tie-in with the University of Illinois for me, I'm now the chairman of the department at Stony Brook University on Long Island, one of the State University of New York schools. But Richard Powers, who assembled the text, and I met here at the University of Illinois about 35 years ago.
You did your undergraduate here.
I did, and my master's degree here about 183 years ago, actually 1970 to 1976. And I should mention I worked at WILL Radio for 3 years.
Did you really?
In the mid-70s.
And what did you do here, I have to ask,
Mostly got in trouble, but I worked the Saturday morning Classics by Request program. I programmed and announced 3 hours in the afternoon on Are You Still
90.9.
And I also was involved in a program on contemporary music called Music, Sound, and Noise, a 90-minute-a-week program, which I originally co-produced and then later hosted. So was here for quite a while in much less attractive surroundings, I have to say.
Well, I started working at this station in those less attractive surroundings.
Okay,
we used
so
to
you
be
know,
in Gregory
you know,
Hall and campus.
You know it well.
Yeah, well, nobody warned me of that, so welcome
we wanted
back.
Wanted to spring that on you.
Yeah, well,
thank you.
And John Frain now hosts Classics by Request.
Which I'm sure he's much better at it than I was.
I have no context. I'm not going to comment in any event, so that by way of aside.
Right, so to answer the question, when I got the commission to write a set of songs, I remembered that maybe 15 years before I'd seen a documentary on the Robert Falcon Scott expedition to the South Pole in 1910. It's a fairly well-known expedition, mostly because of its tragic final circumstances, which is that Scott, who was a British naval officer, left for the pole, 800-mile brutal schlep, as the British would say, and made it to the pole only to find that a Norwegian team led by Roald Amundsen had gotten there 33 days before he did. So very disappointed, they turned back to make the 800-mile return trip and didn't make it. So they actually died in a tent. Two died prior to the final three dying in a tent. The circumstances are somewhat in dispute, but very interesting. And in the tent, Scott wrote letters to the families of the men who had died or were dying with him. And these letters were so moving that 20 or more years ago, I decided that this would be a wonderful subject for a set of songs. And then when the West Point Band made the commission, I decided that I would use these texts. So having collaborated before with Rick Powers, who by that time had become a celebrated novelist, I asked him for some poems, and he sent me some poems, but I didn't mention the whole Scott idea. So he just wrote some poems and sent them about a day after I asked for them. And then I said, well, you know, what I really had in mind was this big subject, the Scott expedition. And he said, well, you know, that would be a big project. I really can't do that at the moment. But, you know, you're not a bad writer, so why don't you take on the writing of the texts? So I said, okay, and I read some books and wrote some texts and sent them to him. And I got a call 5 minutes after I emailed them to him. And he said, rather resignedly, okay, I'll do this project. I like to think that he was so inspired by my text that he decided he needed to horn in on it, but I think the fact is he spared me the embarrassment of putting text together. So he took then the 500-page diary of Robert Falcon Scott, which is absolutely beautiful writing, very sensitive writing with great sympathy for the animals, and wonderful descriptions of the landscape, and a very funny passage about the penguins and how the little Adelie penguins would come running up to the men, but only when the men sang to them, because they were very shy, and then would always run back to the water when the men stopped singing to them. And Rick did a masterful job taking those 500 pages and reducing them to 6 song texts, which really cover the entire story, especially the last song, which is about 11 minutes long, and basically tells the story of getting to the pole, being disappointed, heading back, and then dying in the tent. A very uplifting subject.
Well, but in between times, it sounds like there is uplift. You said, sort of matter of fact that, you know, this struck you that it would make a good subject for a song cycle, and I guess it's not obvious to me how you got to that. I mean, you can be inspired, but why songs out of something so massive?
You know, I think what attracted me to this was the opportunity to write music about what was probably not a less complicated day, but maybe in some ways the straightforwardness of this kind of extreme heroism was attractive to me. To write music without irony, to have an opportunity to write marches, which are in here, to write tunes, to write heroic music, to write glowing music, and to set a story that I think is really just so extraordinary. You know, what people can do and what people try to do, and the courage and uprightness with which they made this expedition. I was just very attracted at first to the beauty of the sentiments, but later, what attracted me, especially writing for a military band, I really wanted to try to embrace that less cynical earlier time, and this story and the text gave me great opportunity to do that.
Is there a context in your own work that led you to this?
No, nor in my life. I mean, I would much rather see a documentary about exploration than actually go explore anywhere. So I think maybe the disparity between what I'm willing to undergo as far as physical hardships and the actual physical hardships was even more attractive than it might have been if I were, you know, if I were an explorer or a mountain climber or something like that.
But also within the musical context, I mean, you mentioned heroism, for example. Is heroic music something that you see yourself writing on occasion, or was this something new as well?
I think it was something new. I mean, I came up during a time when composers were writing very avant-garde music and were not, Boulez wrote about clearing away the rubble of the past and doing things that were entirely new. And one of the University of Illinois professors, Herbert Bruin, used to say, write the music you don't like yet.
And he was a professor of yours.
Yes, he was. And in fact, I think he, in a clever way, expressed a sentiment of the time. So writing music like this, which I think if people come and hear it, they'll hear is actually rather traditional in certain ways. It's a tonal piece for the most part. I mean, things sort of fall apart toward the end to represent the way things fell apart for Scott. But this is tonal music with heroic horn calls and a dance hall tune from 1908 that the men sang to the penguins to get them to run up to them, and a lot of opportunity for sort of received music. And I had a roommate here at the University of Illinois many years ago who said that Mahler wrote his Fourth Symphony when he was hoping to be Haydn. And in a way, maybe I wrote this piece hoping to be Mahler and having the excuse to be Mahler by this somewhat, you know, extreme and, you know, at this point, anachronistic, heroic story. And I was very attracted to that, although there's nothing else in my music that, in my works up to this point that might have led up to this.
It suggested this might have happened.
Right.
For you musically. I'm talking with Perry Goldstein, who's the composer of the opening work for Thursday night's concert by the University of Illinois Wind Symphony, which will be in the Fullinger Great Hall at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. That'll start at 7:30. It is part of a conference that's happening at the university right now that's called Writing Another Future, Science Fiction, the Arts, and Humanities. And, of course, Scott's trip to the Antarctic, not exactly science fiction. It's science fiction realized, right. I suppose.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I wonder if I can mention what a spectacular job the Wind Ensemble, we just came from rehearsal, is doing under the direction of Linda Morehouse. Really, 40-something years ago, I sat in that Wind Ensemble, and they're much better than I was at that time. I mean, it's really a remarkably good group. And I also wanted to mention, as you did, that Brenda Harris, who's a faculty member at Stony Brook University, has come all this way to sing it, and she's a spectacular singer, and she's sitting to my right. So I, I don't want to not thank her.
Well, I want to bring her into this conversation coming up in a little bit, but first I wanted to hear some of the music, some of the opening of the piece. It's a six-movement piece, as you said earlier, a six-song piece. It's called Should This Be Found? Six Songs on Scott's Last Expedition. And this features the ensemble for which it was written, the United States Military Academy Band at West Point, and the soprano that we'll hear, I don't know if we'll hear it in this first movement yet, maybe we'll get to
you
it.
You will, yeah.
Mary Kay Messenger, does
right.
she sing?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this is called The Voyage Out here on Live and Local. That is the very opening of a piece by Perry Goldstein called, I should have asked, you say Goldstein or Stein?
Yeah.
You're a Steiner.
Right.
Okay, fair enough. Perry Goldstein called Should This Be Found? Six Songs on Scott's Last Expedition, and the movement called The Voyage Out. The soloist in this recording, Mary Kay Messenger, along with the ensemble for whom the piece was written, the United States Military Academy Band at West Point. And it's going to be performed by soprano Brenda Harris with University of Illinois Wind Symphony, conducted by Linda Morehouse, who actually just came in the studio to join us here. And I wanted to ask Brenda, I was looking at your biography a little bit, and I'm just reading here. You've made a habit of varying your career choices by successfully alternating 20th century and contemporary music. Now, this is talking about opera. Particularly ranging from the Baroque to Schoenberg, Moses and Aaron, and so on. And I wonder how much this sort of thing, by which I mean songs especially, but more particularly accompanied songs, you know, large ensemble accompanied songs, have fit in to what you do as well.
I primarily sing opera. My career, though, has been really varied. I never say no. So I sing a lot.
Thank you.
And I have to say, though, I don't think I've ever sung with a wind ensemble. I mean, like this.
Most sopranos don't.
Yeah, it was really an interesting rehearsal today, even though I've heard the recording and worked on the song, certainly with piano. It's just really an interesting mix of instruments and sound coming at you that I'm not used to, but that was also really fun. I've done a lot of contemporary opera. The last, most recent years of my career have been a whole lot of bel canto and Strauss. And I was just saying to Perry today that it's a lot like Strauss to me.
In what sense?
In terms of concentration. Like, never don't. No, you know, you have to concentrate all the time in these songs. But we were just telling the story last night at dinner. I have to tell you, because I started at Stony Brook. This is my beginning of my third year. So in my first year, a colleague of ours there contacted me and said, you know, since you're new here, we thought it would be interesting if you would sing these songs. And Perry wrote these songs based on the subject, yada, yada. And he's going to orchestrate them, and you could sing them with the symphony. So my first reaction was, oh my God, what if he can't write? Like, what if they're really bad songs? What am I going to say? I'm on the faculty, right? So they sent a copy of the songs, and my husband was with me. We were on the road, and we immediately were taken by them. We both were like, these are really good. Because I had my excuses ready. I was like, oh, dude, sorry, these are too high, or they're too low, or they're not right for me, or whatever. We loved them, and we were really, you know, totally into it. And we were to do them a year ago, actually, because I'm right, right? The diary was discovered 50 years ago last year. And we were slated to do the songs. Perry orchestrated them for the symphony there. And then along came Superstorm Sandy the week before we were to rehearse them. So we had to postpone the concert. So we're doing them in the orchestrated version in a month. But back to your original question, this has been really good for me. This summer I sang and learned Strauss's Elektra. So I'm sort of in the mode of contemporary music, and I don't know. I just think they're fantastic songs. I think they're incredibly moving. I think that it's very interesting that they're set for soprano. We were talking about this as well last night, because you could easily have set them in first person for a male voice. And these are in first person for a female voice, which is kind of interesting.
Well, that's actually a good question I hadn't even thought of. Why did you do that?
For a practical reason, which is the commission was for soprano and band. The West Point band has a soprano. And originally I was thinking that I would... When I had the task of trying to come up with some poetry, of having the story be told through the point of view of the widow. Just, in fact, Scott writes on the diary, "Send this diary to my wife." And then I suppose as he was dying, he crossed out the word wife, and he inserted the word widow. And I thought it might be interesting for a soprano to sing from the point of view of Scott's celebrated wife, who was actually a fine sculptor, discovering that her husband had died and reading the diaries. But when Rick got his hands on it, he thought, I'm sorry, he's not here to speak for himself, but I think he decided that it would be much more immediate to have the diary just sung, the words from the diary sung by the soprano. So that's how that came about.
And that's Rick Powers, Richard Powers, who wrote. Did he take the text... Are the words that he used taken right out of the diaries,
yes,
or did he...
Yes, but very artfully arranged to both tell the story and to also give me the variety that I needed to make something that wasn't, for 35 minutes, uniformly glum or uniformly anything. There's a lot of humor in the text. There's a lot of change of mood. At one point, Scott says... great God, this is an awful place. He finally lets himself, experience the disappointment of reaching the pole and discovering that he wasn't first, and then realizing that he was going to have to return 800 miles the same way. And he says, "Good God, this is an awful place." And then right afterwards, he says, "But we have to go back." I mean, he. Every moment at which he has this sort of epiphany of the hardship, he, with typical stiff upper lip, he decides he's going to do his duty. And I thought Rick set all that wonderfully to give the real character of this extraordinary man in this expedition.
And just out of curiosity, as a complete aside, Roald Amundsen got there before Scott. Did he get at it? Did he get
he
out?
He did.
Successful?
And he did it in a very... it's a fascinating story. He did it in a very expeditious way, eating the dogs as they tired. And Scott's expedition was a scientific expedition. And for a good part of the trip, Scott and his men were they called it man-hauling 200-pound sleds in the worst weather. And if it got a little warmer, it was even worse because the sleds would get stuck in the slush for 800 miles. I mean, it was just an unbelievable task. And the other irony is that Amundsen was on his way to the North Pole, and as he was on his way, it was discovered. So he turned and came back to discover the South Pole, and he let Scott know that that's what he was doing. So Scott knew he was in a race, mm-hmm. and then, of course, Amundsen got there. And when Scott got to the pole, he saw, they glimpsed the tent of the Norwegians. And in the tent, there was a letter to Scott, or note to Scott saying, if we don't make it, please bring this letter to the King of Norway. Mm. Of course, Scott didn't make it, and Amundsen did.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a couple of times their encounters with the penguins and singing songs to them. Yeah. And so I thought we'd hear at least some of this movement, which is called Penguins,
right?
From Perry Goldstein's piece, Should This Be Found? Six Songs on Scott's Last Expedition. Again, we're going to hear Mary Kay Messenger with the... I keep forgetting the name, U.S. Military Academy Band at West Point.
Right, and I should just say the movement is bookended by some very dissonant music, because in fact it's the penguins who have the last laugh. It's very playful, but there's something sinister too, which you'll probably hear at the beginning.
And I think we've had that context made. I'm just trying to imagine Antarctica. I'm happy to stay home.
Okay.
Wilson went over the floor to capture some penguins. We saw the birds brought up to him and rush away again. He says most comical and interesting. They will always come up but a trot when we sing to them. Voices to admiring penguins. Well, she's got bells on her fingers and rings on her toes. Elephants to ride upon wherever she goes. So come to your neighbor the next Patrick's Day. Be Mr. Mumbo Jumbo Jijibo Jay.
I think you get an idea of some of the fun of at least some of this piece. And also, Perry, you mentioned earlier, you get to be Mahler for a bit. And there was some Mahler in there, it seemed to me. I didn't really think about it until that last moment.
I'm very fond of Dissknaben Wunderhorn, which is folk songs and, very cleverly arranged and conceived folk songs, often with a lot of irony and sarcasm. But there are also moments of funeral march type moments in the piece that I think remind me of Mahler.
Have you sung Mahler, Brenda?
A tiny bit, not much, in the symphonies. You know, I just have to throw in here and say there's something about this, going back to the science fiction aspect of this whole festival, I think this thing that's so, it's so interesting to us because it's a cycle about passion, and it's almost impossible for us to understand how someone would actually risk their lives at this time with no cell phones and hardly any ability to contact anyone and go into Antarctica or to shoot off in a rocket in space. I really, like, can't go there. But we all, I think the human condition, we all respect the passion. I mean, I think musicians, you know, we all have a passion for that. I have a passion for singing. So I think there's something that really connects about all these things because there's a weird, almost, what do you want to say, like a something you relate to this, you know, people even in the audience that you want to have a passion for something or you respect this passion. I think there's something really to gain in promoting that. And this cycle, to me, has passion all over the place in every bar. It really exemplifies this guy's need to discover. It's so cool in that way.
And this music will be played by University of Illinois Wind Symphony with Brenda Harris as a soloist. It'll actually be the first piece on the program, which is tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And it's going to be conducted by Linda Morehouse, who's the acting director of bands. I wanted to bring you briefly into the conversation here, Linda. We just have a couple more minutes to comment perhaps on the last piece that is on the program, which I got to hear couple of recordings that I found on YouTube, including one by the YouTube Symphony,
yes.
Called Mothership, which at least the title fits in this theme of the conference. This is by Mason Bates. Is this a piece that you found?
Yes, and absolutely. I was looking for something that would fit the theme of Professor Taylor's vision. And so I think it works quite well. Whereas the first piece on the program, Perry's piece, is a fairly large grouping of instruments, but still one and apart for the majority of the sections. The last piece on the program involves everybody, also has a little bit of techno-electronics. There are some areas for improvisation. We're featuring one of our saxophonists as a soprano saxophone soloist, and then our pianist will take a couple rides, as you might say, during the piece. And then one thing that makes it interesting is that I, as the conductor, I move in and out of a click track, which is... it's challenging, and I have a monitor in front of me, and I have to make sure that I'm with the click track at the right times of the music in order to make the
you
thing
can do
work.
Broadway after this.
Well, you know, I saw people can go on YouTube and actually hear the composer talking about this, and I saw him doing this thing, but I didn't really know what
yes,
it is.
Yes, and he is the click track. He is the techno-electronic person. But when the composer is not there, there is a downloadable, I guess you could say, click track. And so one of our graduate students is pushing buttons on his computer every so many measures as marked in the score. And so you'll hear, you know, the rockets taking off, and you'll hear these little beeps that sound like they're coming from outer space. And another challenge is to try and match the same pitch that's coming at you from this machine. And so it's been fun, challenging, and we also do it in the dark, which is another challenge. And then we'll have some visual enhancement since we're already using a screen. For the super titles in Perry's piece at the beginning of the program, we decided that we would utilize the screen at the end.
For some visual.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Steve, is anything like that going to be involved in your piece as well?
Well, actually, not in my piece for Linda's concert, but on the concert this evening, where we have two world premieres, one by Dmitry Tomasko from Princeton University with five singers and orchestra based on a science fiction story about a robot working at Amazon.com. And then there is another piece by Fernando Benedon, who is from Washington, D.C., and that's a retelling of Italo Calvino, two cosmic comics, and that has some beautiful artwork with stories that are going to be projected while we play the piece.
Okay. Well, let me just sort of run through the schedule again. It's a conference called Writing Another Future, Science Fiction, the Arts and Humanities. The inaugural concert is tonight at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts by the Illinois Modern Ensemble in the direction of Steve Taylor. And then tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock at the Music Building Auditorium on the University of Illinois campus, the keynote address or talk by Kim Stanley Robinson. It's called Science Fiction and the Arts. Thursday night, then, the concert by the UI Wind Symphony at 7:30 at the Krannert Center. And Friday at 3 o'clock, a concert from the electroacoustic music from the University of Illinois Experimental Music Studios. That's 3 o'clock also in the Music Building Auditorium. I want to say thanks to Perry Goldstein, Brenda Harris, Steve Taylor, and Linda Morehouse for joining us on the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a lot of fun with the concert. It sounds like a marvelous concept and some wonderful music that we've certainly heard from you, Mr. Goldstein and Mr. Taylor. Thank you very much. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and in just a couple of moments here, I'll be talking with the director of bands at Eastern Illinois University. Her name's Alicia Neal, and they have a concert on Friday night, which we'll be hearing about. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois. Now featuring the new exhibit, the James Bond theme, Music to Live, Die, and Love, Another Day. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. We just heard a performance of a tune that's probably familiar by Percy Grainger called Handel and the Strand. It exists in many different forms. This happens to be one for wind ensemble and played by the symphonic band here at the University of Illinois under the direction of, in that recording, of James Keene, who is the a former director of bands here. That is one of the pieces that's going to be performed by the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony, conducted by its still new director of bands, Alicia Neal, on a concert Friday night, which they're sharing with the jazz ensemble there. And Alicia Neal is my guest this portion of Live and Local. Thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And a belated welcome to our area.
Thank you. Yeah, I've really enjoyed my time so far in Central Illinois. We have great students here at Eastern and great faculty members, and it's just a pleasure to be here.
Just by way of introduction to you, tell us where you were before and a little bit of your own educational background.
Sure. I grew up in Texas and attended the University of Colorado for my undergraduate and master's degrees in conducting. Then I moved to Chicago, Evanston actually, and attended Northwestern University for my doctorate. Taught in Chicago for a year at St. Xavier University, and then moved up to Minnesota, where I was the Associate Marching Band Director of the University of Minnesota Marching Band. And then I moved down here as the Director of Bands to Charleston, Illinois.
So congratulations. And we share Northwestern in our backgrounds. I was a student there some years ago when John Painter was still around and not really doing much conducting at that point, but played in his bands.
Excellent.
The program that you all are playing on Friday has a mix of standard band pieces, as well as one transcription, and then a couple of quite new pieces, in fact, one of which we had a discussion about, I think probably earlier this year, in another conversation. And I wondered how you went about choosing this particular program.
Well, each year I try and consider what I think the ensemble might need to help them grow to the next level or kind of put them on the right trajectory to doing what they're studying and what they are trying to do as in their career as musicians and future teachers. So I try and select repertoire that's varied from what they've done in the past, or that just will give them a variety of things to think about or listen for or kind of work towards on one concert. So we've got quite the variety, like you said, a couple older pieces and a couple new pieces. And one of the really exciting things about band literature is you never know when the next great piece is going to be written, because so much of it is being written right now. So it's very exciting to expose the students to old and new.
Well, I talked about this in the earlier part of the show today, but part of the promo, my promo for today's show, commented on wind ensembles as being probably a little more adventurous than orchestras in their programming, by which I meant mostly I think that you all are able to play, or at least feel able to play, more newer music. And I wondered if you know a reason for that from your point of view.
Yeah, well, I think that generally wind ensemble audiences are more open to new music, to hearing it. And additionally, I know that a lot of composers like to write for bands because they get performances of their music that is really well rehearsed by some of the top bands in the country, because professional orchestras might rehearse 3 or 4 times, then give a premiere of a new piece. And if you're going to have college students perform your piece, it might be on a 5 or maybe a 6-week concert cycle, maybe a little bit less, where you get 3 rehearsals per week. So it is really well rehearsed, and they often get really solid performances of their music from some of the leading collegiate ensembles in the country.
And I guess it should be added that most bands in the country are university affiliated.
Correct. I mean, there are the service bands, out of Washington, D.C., and those are certainly fantastic performing ensembles. But aside from them, a lot of the leading ensembles in the country that are band or wind symphony or wind ensemble are collegiate ensembles. There are a few professional wind ensembles, but not very many.
And, of course, lots of community bands around, but I'm willing to bet, without being quite as certain about this, that they're a little more conventional in their programming.
Sure. It certainly depends on the community band, but I would say that was probably mostly true.
Tell me about the Vincent Persichetti piece that's on here. It's kind of wonderfully entertaining, and it's the oldest piece on the program, I guess. The Handel and the Strand, which we played first, was 1912, but this one, 1950.
This piece, I think, is exceptionally charming, and it was Vincent Persichetti's first piece for band, actually. And he said of the piece that he was setting out to compose a piece for orchestra, and then as he started composing, he just realized that the strings were never going to enter. And that's how he ended up with this piece. So, it's charming. It's funny at times. It's sarcastic. It's beautiful. It's soulful, and it's just got a little bit of everything in it, and it's just a lot of fun to conduct and a lot of fun for the students to play.
And did he go on to write other pieces for band?
He did. He has a symphony for band in 4 movements that's just a stunningly beautiful work and just really entertaining.
Well, let's hear a couple of, since you mentioned sort of humorous, a couple of the movements from the middle of this piece, the dance and the burlesque. Did he have a program in mind, as far as you know, other than just different character pieces?
Not that I know of. I think it's, as far as I'm aware, it's just mostly he was just kind of experimenting with, what the ensemble could do in these different styles.
Here's a performance of these two movements from the Divertimento for Band by Vincent Persichetti. It's played here by the North Texas Wind Symphony, conducted by Eugene Corporan, here on Live and Local, and the complete work will be played by the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony, conducted by Alicia Neal, who's my guest here on Live and Local. Those are two movements from the Divertimento for Band by Vincent Persichetti, Dance and Burlesque, movements 3 and 4. with Eugene Corporon conducting the North Texas Wind Symphony. Alicia Neal will conduct the piece at Eastern Illinois University in a concert Friday night at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston. I wonder, Alicia, just if you have had the chance to hear the band I just played at North Texas live.
I actually have not. I have certainly heard some of their recordings. They put out quite a few very helpful recordings for band directors that can't get to concerts, you know, and they may live in a small town, but they have access to great music because of the wonderful work that Eugene Corporon and North Texas Ensemble does.
Yeah, I was just curious because we do have a lot of their recordings here, and they seem to be well done, and I never really asked anybody if they are, in fact, one of the top bands in the country, or they just happen to have recorded a lot.
I think it's both. I mean, they certainly are one of the top bands in the country, and, you know, Eugene makes it a goal of his to record a lot of the new music that's been coming out, and sometimes even older music that's maybe not recorded as much, and he provides a great reference set of recordings for high school and college band directors.
You said that a lot of composers like to write for band, partly because they'll get performed. But I wonder whether the unique colors of the band offer something a little bit different than, say, writing for orchestra, which of course has plenty of its own colors.
Sure. I mean, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said unique colors and different things that the band can do, because that's actually the reason that I love to conduct band, because of the color options available to me when blending instruments or instrument families together in different ways and kind of balancing things in different ways. I just find it endlessly entertaining and just a lot of fun.
What's your own instrumental background?
I grew up playing the trumpet.
And do you get to do that anymore?
You know, I wish I did more than I do, but I play a little bit here and there. I've been known to take it out and play at an EIU football game in the past with some of my students, and they get a real kick out of it, but I don't get to play very much anymore.
And what do you find, I mean, now that you've been at Eastern now for, I guess, a year, now you said you've enjoyed working with the students there, particular challenges compared to, say, where you've been before?
I wouldn't say challenges. I think every place has, you know, things that are challenging and that are really rewarding. And I've actually really loved the transition into this position here. The students are committed and fantastic, and they really want to make music at a really high level. And that's been exceptionally rewarding for me. And one other little known thing about Eastern Illinois University is that the applied faculty here are world class. The people giving private lessons to the music majors here are just very, very talented, brilliant musicians and brilliant thinkers. And it's just very rewarding to be surrounded by people like I just described.
And folks can hear some of those students of those applied faculty and, of course, of the band program at Eastern Illinois University. Alicia Neal will conduct the Wind Symphony in a program that actually starts with a performance by the jazz ensemble there, directed by Sam Fagley, the program called Life in the Groove, and then the Wind Symphony taking on the second part of that program. And let's go out with some of the piece that actually opens the concert, the second half of the concert, the Ecstatic Fanfare. This is another newer piece just from last year by Stephen Bryant. What can you tell us about him?
Stephen Bryant is one of the up-and-coming young composers. He's already had several hits, as it were, in the band world, and he's just writing really interesting music that sounds fun and doesn't sound too out there. I know some of the concern with new music is that it's a little bit too out there and a little bit too just difficult to understand for the layperson. And this piece is a lot of fun and has colors and sounds in it that I think the audience will really identify with and grasp.
Here is a very recent performance from earlier this year by the Baylor Wind Ensemble, conducted by Isaiah Orojima. And many thanks to Alicia Neal, who will conduct the Eastern Group on Friday night for a concert that starts, I think, at 7:30, is it?
That's correct.
and appreciate you joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our broadcast today is made possible by The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. For more information, the number is 359-7377. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL-FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. For Live and Local, I'm Kevin Kelly.